time for more movie thoughts, reviews, and royal commentary from Richard Fitzwilliams and Natasha Wanton on the Midweek Drive.
Honey, maybe we should just call it a night.
You go ahead. I gotta finish these centerpieces and rearrange the seating chart.
Yes.
Hello.
Mom, now is not the time.
I just want to ask, is that genetics or is it like Pilates? We got you a gift.
It's your something borrowed.
Brings you good luck, except for Uncle Greg, who ended up decapitated on that forklift. But that's not the knife's fault.
Someone just left that in the bathroom.
You invited your ex? Looks like he's leading a porn safari.
Oops, he forgot to button his shirt all the way off.
Is it time for dinner?
You look so much better than the rest of us.
I think the left boob is slightly lower than the right boob.
Something doesn't feel right.
There are pirates outside, and they took everybody hostage. Here's the plan. I'll trap him in the net.
Spray him in the eyes. It won't work.
Why?
Too many status. See, that's why you only have a plan with one step.
Not once did I wonder if I'd be walking handcuffed through the jungle with a live grenade.
Sir, sir, give me the grenade, sir.
You got it.
Are you dead?
We're gonna fix this. That dress is growing on me.
I wanted something less traditional.
Nobody with my family.
Don't you let go!
Stop shooting your sister!
Carol, thank you for the cake knife. I freaking love this cake knife.
All right, we're off and running, so to speak, with another adventure in which Natasha Wanton is with us. Richard Fitzwilliams clearly actually challenged to actually work through that. Or maybe he's actually working out the nuances, the subtleties, the general fantastic work of Jennifer Lopez in Shotgun Wedding. It's a possibility, but we'll find out, I'm sure, as the thing proceeds. Natasha, I gather you haven't seen Shotgun Wedding as yet.
No, but it's on my list. I really like the look of this one, but I can see Richard giving it probably a 4 or a 5, but we'll see when he comes on.
Absolutely. I mean, everything's open for discussion, debate, and other areas within that. So as we sort of obviously look towards the filmic world of a whole range of aspects, Shotgun Wedding, as I said, one of those particular aspects, which I probably would say could become a cult classic, but yet again, it's in that package that, as Jessica Bursis would say, not another movie about the rich and powerful doing rich and powerful things and basically getting their comeuppance, although in this particular case, it's more about pirates. And, of course, the movie features not only Jennifer Lopez, but the wonderful, gotta find my way, chap that is Lenny Kravitz, amongst others.
I just think it's one of the, I think the reason why they keep churning these movies out and we see so many of them is just the escapism, the fantastical escape element of it. I think, you know, you've got the big premise, which is, you know, this huge luxury wedding and just the element of it. There is like a sort of schadenfreude, I suppose, element to it, but also just, yeah, the comedy of the moment, the extremist, kind of the more extreme the sort of, I guess, what's happening, the more sort of audiences seem to react to it. So there are a lot of movies like this, but I think there'll continue to be a lot of movies like this because they sell. And they're just a bit of fun. I know Richard probably isn't going to think it's particularly theoretically brilliant and Shakespeare, but I think it's a good bit of fun. I'm probably the more of the market audience for this one than Richard might be. But I could be completely wrong and I might be about to eat my words. We'll see.
Exactly. And who knows, maybe we won't even hear from Richard in this particular sequence. Maybe he's so locked up with respect to BAFTAs and so on, he hasn't quite connected. I know he did want to talk about the passing of Raquel Welsh, who left us aged 82, of course, known for probably a number of iconic roles, not least of which was 1 million years BC, in which the fur bikini very much came to the fore as an essence of that. And clearly she has a daughter, Tani Welsh, who also had a reasonable career from that point of view. I think it's fair to say Raquel's career never really quite managed to reach the heights of somebody who I was shocked to find Richard never liked and refused to do an obituary for, and that was Doris Day. I actually thought Doris Day, certainly in terms of that whole sequence, was much more of a kind of filmic success than Raquel. Although, having said that, a lot of kind of areas that Raquel Welsh got involved with, including, of course, Fantastic Voyage, there we are, and Bandolero, and, of course, the Three Musketeers. Clearly, she was an iconic part, in the same way as arguably Sophia Loren and others would say. Raquel Welsh for yourself, Natasha, any particular comments you'd like to share?
No, I think, firstly, I'm trying to go over the fact that Richard didn't want to comment on Doris Day. I think that's quite a surprising statement. You shocked me there. I she's not one that I would particularly know about without having to look her up, but then I think she's one of those people that when you do look her up, you're surprised to see just how many things she has been in. I saw a little bit of coverage on the news here, but they've not really made a big son of dance about it. Obviously I like Three Musketeers. I've seen a couple of her films, but I wouldn't be able to maybe point her out particularly in the cinema and say, oh, that's her film.
Yeah. Well, it is. And again, I think in terms of 1 million years BC, clearly it's one of those classic areas that is an important side of things. I mean, somebody who could obviously wear a fur bikini quite happily would indeed be Sarah Huntley. Isn't that right, Sarah?
Might have done in my time.
Exactly. We're just discussing Raquel Welsh, sadly past age 82. Any thoughts, any memories, any particular movies that you thought, oh, yes, definitely Bandolero or indeed Three Musketeers or arguably probably her most controversial role, which was Myra Breckinridge, in which, of course, she played a transgendered individual back in 1970.
Oh, that's very sad. I didn't know that. Was it today or yesterday that she died?
A few days ago, actually, when she passed, etc. But, you know, this is part and parcel of the whole thing. You see, the notion of celebrity and so on are in so many ways part and parcel of the whole thing. So Raquel Welsh, subject of the whole notion of a sex symbol back in the day, no longer with us.
Oh, well, I think to me, actually, Alex, probably of my generation, it's not a particular film. It's an image that you have in your mind as soon as you say Raquel Welsh.
The fur bikini.
Absolutely, yes. Of a shapely body. But yes, very glam, very glam. Oh.
As I said, Richard may or may not, should he actually join us, be part and parcel of the whole thing. But I know he was also keen to talk about Noises Off. So let's talk from your own perspective about Noises Off and indeed your experience of effectively having to create the role that Felicity Kendall has kind of tried to take on board. But clearly, Felicity Kendall, she's no Sarah Huntley.
Well, I did it a long time ago. So actually, I wasn't playing the part that she's playing now, which is what I would be playing now if I was in it. It's a farce by Michael Frayn. It's brilliant fun, but it's extremely nerve-wracking to do because the cue lines literally have to be like that. And I think what Richard's talking about is when you go and see the production of it, there's lots of stunts and lots of slapstick that have to happen. And if they don't, they look very good if they work and they look awful if they don't. So it's quite nerve-wracking. And I know that when I did it on the first night, people knew their lines, but everyone was more nervous of not forgetting their lines, of having something fall on them or be in the wrong place. So you had on the stage lots of marks to stand. So if you stood there, you knew that when that flap fell down, it wouldn't fall on you. And then also door openings and shuttings and that sort of thing. And then obviously quite a lot of the chaos is, sorry, it just makes me laugh remembering. Quite a lot of the chaos is caused by lighting and that those effects. But needless to say, the company that I was with, we were all like, oh no, it's now or never, as Elvis said, it's tonight, it's going to happen. And as much as you rehearse all this, we hadn't ever really got through it without something technically going wrong and stopping on the technical took 2 days. It was rather like the line, for God's sake, say your line, Poppy. What's that, Dad? You know, it's all that. Anyway, what people did, which we thought was a good idea, which wasn't, was on the wing flats that didn't actually fall down, people had done act one, remember, blah, 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 blah. But of course, some people hadn't got glasses on. I didn't wear them then. And then with the lighting that's going up and down, there's people like going, that's all right, coming back on and looking really like, hello. But then when they're going off, I've never seen so many people with scripts going, oh, quick, like that. Yeah. So and then you kind of, I think then once it gets going, it's sort of like a, don't think about it. Don't think about the fact that you're cycling, because if you do, you'll fall off. It's just like we're going with the flow. This is a really frenetic bit and it will go down again. But I think, to be honest, that was less frightening than flying in Peter Pan, because that was truly you really had to find your mark on the stage. And when it's all right when one person's flying or two, but if you miss your mark, then the strings can tangle around everybody because they're kind of going at different levels, and then you have to make sure that you go into the flats for someone to hook onto you, the hook, you see, and or you're hooked up before you come on. And I remember I weighed 8.5 stone and the people that were flying me were saying, you are the heaviest person we've had to fly, because they have to counterbalance with weights for your height. But once they've got you up there, but two things happened. One was, I was in a very relaxed mood, and it got to the end, towards the end of the show, and I took my harness off underneath my nightdress when I didn't need it. And then I was in the bed thinking, oh, this is nice and comfortable. And it's the bit where Peter Pan comes, and I was playing Jane, who's Wendy's daughter, who he says, oh, would you like to, oh, it's not you, Wendy. And she goes, no, I'm Jane, but you know, you'll take me to Never Neverland. And he says, oh, okay. And I realised I hadn't got the harness on. So there was no way I could fly. So I went off the stage.
You can believe you can fly, Sarah. Believe you can fly.
No, yes, really believe it. And Lulu was going, we can fly, and sang another verse. And I practically killed myself putting this child's harness on and then got clipped up. Went off, but she was very kind about it, because the night before she'd completely forgotten her lines, and she was saying, who are you? And I was going, I'm Jane and you're Peter Pan, and
or Tarzan.
We're gonna go because the orchestra are waiting to play. But the thing was, on a good night when we were feeling really good, it makes me cry now, it's quite magical. She says, well, then close your eyes and come with me if you really believe. And then what you do is you'd stand back and you'd fly out over the audience and back again, which was wonderful, but dangerous. So we decide whether we were in a dangerous mood, because somebody at Hornchurch was doing that. They were doing Peter Pan and Peter Pan and the person playing my part both were off then for almost 8 months, because they broke both their legs, because as they flew out, the weights didn't come down or didn't come up, and they smashed their legs twice against the stage. So she used to say, do you feel it's a good day? And we go, yeah, let's go for it.
That's so true. I get it. No, it's worked us through the magic of things as we sort of traverse the whole essence of, obviously, salutes to Raquel Welsh right the way through to, as I said earlier when talking with Natasha, something which I know Richard will actually have appreciated, the nuance, the use of the zipline wire, the tremendous sensitivity that's actually brought by Josh Duhamel, Lenny Kravitz, Jennifer Coolidge, and of course the direction of Jason Moore, which is never knowingly underplayed, the true wonderment and sensitivity of the 2022 classic Shotgun Wedding. Richard, I know you'd love to actually sort of share with us how this probably actually brought you to a whole new experience of the magic of cinema, and how indeed Jennifer Lopez and her cleavage acting, as I refer to it, has again raised the bar considerably when it comes to appreciating quality movie making.
Do you mean raise the bra or the bar?
You see what I did there, Sarah? Well done. Well said. Richard.
Yes, that's, well, I can only say, Alex, that there's almost nothing I can add to that sensitive appreciation of something that mirrored both humour and subtle humour at that, with dramatic tension, which, you know, could rival Psycho. I mean, this, of course, Alex is having some fun, because quite frankly, you could have had fun with Shotgun Wedding, and quite frankly, also, Jason Moore misdirects, and that, I think, is the root of the problem, because it was a very good idea. You have, on the other one hand, comic duo who should have had chemistry between them, even if the actual characters on screen bicker, which indeed they do before their marriage. It's going to be on a private island in the Philippines. They're going to have their friends there. They start arguing. The trouble is, he actually knew but didn't bother to pass on that there'd been problems previously with pirates in the area. And when the pirates...
Just last year...
Well, what's time when it comes to true romance, or indeed when it comes to the fact that you could have one of the guests involved in this wanting blackmail money from the father? Initially, the pirates, when they attack, they don't actually catch the, well, shall we call them a happy couple, actually bickering like mad. But here's the problem. When Darcy, played by J-Lo, and Tom, played by Josh Duhamel, actually start killing pirates, it should become a mixture between the comic on the one hand. Remember, the wedding guests are standing in water quite far up. It must be pretty cold, I think, being an extra in this movie. The facts are that it could have balanced humour and tension, and it should have balanced good chemistry between J-Lo, Josh Duhamel, and indeed you've got Jerry Kravitz as Sean, who is one of the guests who in fact is responsible for this mess. It had potential. You mix a couple of ideas and you carry it off with a bit of colourful scenery and a lot of gags. Well, the only gagging I did, and as Alex has sensitively pointed out, it is indeed not a subtle movie. It is, in fact, one that falls between two stools. It's not funny enough to be entertaining, and it's certainly not tense enough to make any sense at all. And quite frankly, you don't care what's happening, other than the fact you do care that your time is being eaten up by watching what had potential but did not realize it. And there isn't the chemistry between the leads they need, and there is certainly not the script to make this an enjoyable or amusing experience, which it really should have been and could have been. No, it's wasteful. And because you have quite a few characters actually killed, so, you know, you think you're going to get a spot of realism. What in fact you get is something that's banal.
Wow. Kathy Manso, have you been checking out Shotgun Wedding before I actually point out that clearly the irony, and again, deep-rooted irony, of Jason Moore actually having Jennifer Lopez portray Darcy, when in fact the real villain of the piece is the actress whose character is played by Darcy. Two Darcys in one. Anyway, over to you, Kathy.
Oh, man. Well, I don't want to speak ill of anyone. and I'm not looking to start a fight, but In all honesty, whenever I see a movie with J-Lo in it, which is like, I don't mean any, I just kind of know what I'm going to get and I'm not going to really be invested. I'll be honest, the last movie I saw with J-Lo where I actually really enjoyed it was Monster in Law. And let's be real, it was because of Jane Fonda. And I tell people you should watch that. It's a fun time. But also her films don't age gracefully. And there always seems to be a wedding involved. I don't understand how there's always a wedding involved, but there is. So I think for this one, I'm going to have to just like let it go by. And that's okay. I think it's okay.
Sarah, something which you feel actually, given that we have just passed the fourth anniversary of the Phil Lynas Lily Holloman wedding, which I heard was possibly going to use as a model for Shotgun Wedding. Only kidding, Phil. But any thoughts from yourself on this one? I mean, Jennifer Lopez, I mean, surely, you know, in so many ways, our contemporary Raquel Welch.
Yes, but I really agree with what Kath is saying. I think I'd rather watch an old Raquel Welch film, to be honest. Mm. That's me. Mm.
Bandolero, perhaps, with Dean Martin. Always a good one. Natasha, I know you're keen to see both Ant-Man and the Wasp, and probably a double bill with Shotgun Wedding would be the ideal way of actually celebrating life in the Antipodes. You kind of called Richard's views pretty much. I mean, I suspect he's going to go for a three. But what are your thoughts on Shotgun Wedding? Has he put you off?
Looking back on it, my prediction of Richard going for a four was probably too generous, wasn't it, at the start of the show? he's not put it off.
If I may interject, you're absolutely spot on. I am going for four.
Oh, yes, hold it. No, he's not put me off. To be honest, I probably need it to cheer myself up after going to see Ant-Man and Wasp. The online reviews are currently holding up to what they are. I'll go next weekend and we'll see what happens. I might need to drown my sorrows with a bit of this afterwards.
Well, equally, I know you were shocked when I revealed in Richard's absence that he was wanting to do a little tribute to Raquel Welch, and yet Doris Day got no such treatment from him at all, basically. And certainly, given the whole system, I think Doris Day probably, if we're looking at these things, more significant in the cinematic history than Raquel Welch. However, Richard, don't let me stop your hatred of Doris Day let you actually from eulogising about Raquel.
Years BC erupts on the screen with volcanic excitement. 1 million years BC, when the earth parted and the mountains fell. Primitive man and monstrous beasts fought each other to inherit the earth. Since time began has the primitive scene been captured for the screen with such imaginative realism. Ah! Behold man 1 million years BC. Introducing the fabulous Raquel Welch, the sensational star discovery of this or any other year in 1 million years BC. See her as Loana the Fair One, who deserted her tribe and risked her life to follow Tumac of the Rock People. John Richardson as Tumac, as big and strong as the beasts he fought for survival. Nupondi the Wild One, whom no man could resist. See the fascinating, strange, and fearful creatures who roamed and ruled the Earth 1 million years BC. The Brontosaurus, a moving mountain of flesh and bone. The Pterodactyl, a flying reptile with giant teeth. The flesh-eating Allosaurus. The Triceratops, a horned dinosaur in battle with the savage Ceratosaurus. You will share the unending thrills and excitement of a world of primitive wonders, of primeval terror and savagery. You will indeed live in another world, in another time, as the centuries fall back to reveal the Earth 1 million years B.C. Introducing the fabulous Raquel Welch as Loanna the Fair One, John Richardson as Tumac,
I would simply say Raquel Welch has and had a reputation throughout her life. And indeed, it's interesting seeing a recent photograph. She looked so glamorous. She looked absolutely wonderful. She was one of those quintessential individuals who just made their mark on certain films, and no one who saw her could ever forget her. And I mean, there are three movies involved that I saw her in, and I mean, you're going back a long time. You're going back a Journey into the Human Body, in A Fantastic Voyage, which actually was the first hit, and subsequent to that, and you have it behind you, Mankind's First Bikini, Made of Fur, and I don't think from memory the characters spoke anything other than guttural sounds in 1 million years BC.
Much like Jennifer Lopez, as I said.
Well, exactly, Alex. Actually, you know, you're spot on today. It's good to see you in such form. But I have to say, 1 million years BC was one of those iconic movies that you gazed at, shall we say, in the 1960s, and you never forgot it. I think the animals, if you saw them now, would probably not hold up. But when it comes to humans, you had Raquel Welch. She was a byword for glamour throughout her life. She also won a Golden Globe for The Three Musketeers, which, as I remember, was a Richard Lester movie years ago. I think from memory, it was rather naughty because he was the cast thought they were making one movie. I think he made at least one spin-off off it, and didn't tell them. But she was who she was, and she remained at the apex of Hollywood glamour. People remembered these old movies, and, you know, I think people think very, very fondly of her.
Sarah, anything to add?
Oh, definitely. I mean, maybe it's just because I'm old, but it evokes in you a time, and you only have to look at an image of her to take you to that place. And I haven't seen any pictures of her recently, but it doesn't surprise me what Richard's saying, that she was glamorous until that time she went up. So I'm really pleased to hear that, because I think we all need that kind of magic to know that there are some people, a bit like Leslie Phillips, that are just always them, and that's how we all should be.
Okay.
Oh yes, that's the image.
Anyway, moving on from there to a slightly more serious text that probably deserves merit and consideration. And this obviously deals with will you or will you not wear your hijab and so on. We're talking, of course, about Saint Omer.
We are, and indeed Saint Omer is a French legal drama, subtitles, and it's based on a true story, a terrifying case in 2016 of Fabienne Cabou, who was accused of murdering her 15-month-old child by leaving her on the beach to be swept away by the tide. Quite extraordinary. And the director, Alice Diop, followed the case. And this is, so to speak, a contemporary retelling of it. We meet, for example, Roma, who's an academic played by Keiji Kitagami, and she is in fact intending to dramatize the case, and also she sees the power of Smith Medea, which I emphasized, but it leads her to question identity, question also the fact that she's pregnant, and to what extent what she sees in the courtroom, because she's following it, she's actually there, as Alice Diop was in the original case, to what extent it actually affects her. This is it's an extraordinary film. The trial of the character is called Lorenz Coley, played by Guzlagi Malanda, and we meet this character in the courtroom. Indeed, most of it is, in fact, court transcripts, a lot of them taken from the original trial, and she clearly has mental problems. Very clearly, she's influenced by the treatment. She's originally from Senegal, which Alice Diop was, and so there's a universality in this for the immigrant experience that's very clear. Her treatment at the hands of Luc Dumonté, her partner, played by Javier Marley, and the way society shunned her, and the way then she subsequently was alienated from society that's around her. And so we see the response to this in the way Rama is affected by it. And we also see the cross-questioning in the court. We see the judge, played by Valérie Dreville. We see the defence barrister, played by Radia Petit. And this is a very powerful film, and it forces you, as this dreadful story is told, and there's the theme also of a possibility of sorcery and various influences that perhaps are impossible or very, very difficult to understand, but also the experience of coming to a country where you are, in fact, almost a total non-person. This is fascinating. It not only links back to ancient legends, which is a terrifying story of Medea, but also, of course, it brings you face to face with an extraordinary aspect of contemporary life. The cast is amazing here. I mean, you couldn't fault this film at all. Awards, it's a pity that Guzlagi Malanda didn't feature in the in some of the awards. I thought it was an amazing film. In fact, it has and was, I think it was at Venice, it was highly praised. It has a tremendous impact, and you're mainly meeting the characters, and then subsequently there are scenes of Rama and her partner and how she's affected by this. But most of it is set in a courtroom. But who or what is actually on trial? That's the point.
Kathy Manso, Saint or Saint Omer, one for you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Richard explained it beautifully, as you always do, Richard. But I think it's something that's really complicated too. It's something that you really want to kind of focus on and try to, it's a good chance for perspective as well. So I'm definitely interested, much more than Shotgun Wedding.
Sadly, no sign of J-Lo appearing in Saint-Omer. Maybe it was just that little edge that could have actually lifted it away. But then perhaps there's no wedding in there. Sarah, what about yourself?
Yes, I think I would be very interested to see this, because your natural instinct is, how, why would you do that? But if you brought in the fact that there's a similarity with Medea, and really good productions of Medea, like the Helen McCrow one at the National, which is a new translation, actually. Though it was horrific what she did to her children, she played that part so well that you, I wouldn't say sympathy, but you understood why she did what she did. So my thing would be, like Kathy, I would be interested to go and see this and see with the courtroom and that those scenes, how, you know, why they did what they did, and in their minds, why they did what they did. So yes, I think I would be interested in seeing this one, definitely.
Have you ever thought about removing your hijab?
Did you really have to pick Sterling Heights? Everybody here is Iraqi Christian.
Oh, because I know you'd embarrass us with all this feminist talk, huh?
You need to rest.
I wish.
Mary, still trying to save everyone?
Do you think Mary would ever give me a chance? Some Christian girls date Muslim guys. Besides, I'm an atheist.
All right, Mira. Tell me, what do you want to do with your life, Mama?
A poetic warrior for a woman. Maybe even a rapper.
To the White House, please.
There's a lot you don't know about me.
And you don't know much about me.
Mom! Maybe we just send her to Iraq.
Send her to Iraq. Are you crazy?
Mama, I'm not gonna marry Ahmed.
You have no choice, Niran. Niran, she's gone. Do you know where she is?
I never touched her. Everybody stop!
Niran!
And Natasha?
Yeah, no, I think Richard summed it up best when he said extraordinary. I think that it would be definitely an extraordinary experience to watch this movie. I think that it's a very timely sort of movie that's coming out, especially if there's a couple of big cases going on, unfortunately, now in America, with, you know, several cases where postnatal depression happened. And unfortunately, you know, children were lost as a result of it. Mental health is a very current topic. It's a very interesting topic. I'd like to see how sort of different elements of the society, you talked a little bit, Richard, about their backgrounds and how that portrayed into it. And yeah, it definitely looks like one that would make you think, probably shake you up a little bit. And yeah, that excites me.
Well, returning briefly to the notion of the brief time we spend on the planet, Raquel Welch, of course, 82 years of age. Our next considerate person, who's obviously headed off after doing Greystoke, Legend of Tarzan of the Apes, and such magical things as Revolution. I think there's a thing called Chariots of Fire that was in there as well. Hugh Hudson, also married to Mariam Darbo. Richard, you have some thoughts you want to share with respect to Hugh Hudson, somebody else who has, in those immortal words, popped his clogs as well this week.
Indeed, I have to say, Hugh Hudson for me, and for, I think for everybody, will always be Chariots of Fire, movie 1982.
Not Revolution?
The
movie that almost shut down the British film industry, as Kathy will attest to. You can't have a British group of filmmakers making a film about the most sacred part of the American Revolution. I don't know.
I'm afraid, Alex, because you have mentioned what destroyed his career. I mean, what was so sad when Chariots of Fire won at the Oscars and Colin Whelan won for Best Screenplay, and very unfortunately, he infamously shouted out, "The British are coming." That did not prove to be sensible. With
his
the
name
mission.
Was Paul Hudson, was Hugh Hudson, not Paul Devere.
I fear it was, and whereas Chariots was a marvelous movie. Chariots worked for everybody. If you wanted to flag wave, it was set at the Olympics in the 20s. If you wanted an anti-establishment movie, and Hudson was a strongly anti-establishment figure, though he came from aristocratic roots, then it had the various themes of anti-Semitism and also, of course, your standing up for your faith and against establishment pressure from the runners. There's no question it was amazing, and of course based on real life events, and it ticked all the right boxes. In Charleston, very, very tragically, no longer being with us, he died of AIDS acts, and someone very sadly missed. He played Eric Liddell, who the real Eric Liddell was a missionary who died in China in the Second World War. And of course, Harold Abrahams, the other character. It was a superb movie, so well cast, and one could go on about it. The problem is that it led to the mission, and it also led, which was for the flop, which Roland Joffé's film, I think, but also, unfortunately, it led to Revolution, which was such a disaster that Hudson's film career never really recovered.
It didn't exactly help Richard the fact that he would actually wait several days just to get the right sunset. This is not, as Sarah will attest to, the best way when you're actually on a pressurised film set that you're waiting for a director to get the right sunset. Is it, Sarah, really? That might cause one or two challenges.
Yes, and a lot of money. Yes.
And unfortunately, Natasha Kinski and Al Pacino, it was it. I mean, I did see it and it was frightful. Nobody else saw it. And indeed,
I saw it, Richard. I thought it was wonderful. Mind you, I quite like Shotgun Wedding. Kathy, any thoughts on Hugh Hudson?
I mean, you guys are really going at it today. I don't want to throw a stone in a glass house, but I think you bring up some I wasn't ready for the American Revolution comments. I'm going to be honest, guys. I didn't know you were going to make that kind of reach today, and it really took me from afar. But where were they filming for this perfect sunset? Just curious.
I don't know, actually.
It was Devon.
Alex is actually taking an old story from David Lee. This was David Lean's Ryan's daughter. He was supposed to wait for sunsets for days and so forth.
At least Ryan's daughter had a certain amount of edge to it, you know. But there's a different line here in terms of what Hudson was doing. Anyway, that's by the
way. Did you say it was Dublin?
No, Devon, I think.
Devon? Oh, okay. All right. I mean, who am I to know anything about sunsets there? I cannot help.
Incidentally, Alex, we ought to mention, may I suggest, the BAFTAs this evening.
No, we don't deal with trinkets on the show. Besides, Richard's time has actually sort of left us from that point of view. We've already had our Variety editor who's spoken about that at length, and the Newport Beach Film Festival and the Top 10 Brits. So you've made your predictions. We could do a retrospective after that, and I'm sure we could all actually say, yes, OK, All Quiet on the Western Front has probably swept the board, but so it goes.
It won't, unfortunately. Alex, you should know that the numbers of awards, or you're just being mischievous again, you know perfectly well the numbers of nominations very often don't square up with the numbers of actual awards. 14 is a lot.
I'm just devastated that Andrea Riseborough hasn't actually received her true recognition for the BAFTAs, as she obviously did in the Academy Awards. But that's another line entirely. Natasha, any thoughts on Hugh Hudson? I mean, have you seen any of his movies? I mean, I can't believe Richard actually went through the piece without mentioning Christophe Lambert in Tarzan, of course. Right. Legend of Greystoke. I mean, a true classic.
Chariots of Fire is obviously a classic. I've not seen Revolution or heard of it, but now I'm sort of kind of morbidly curious and I want to watch it. The kind of idea that a load of British people got together and decided to make a very sort of British movie about the American Revolution kind of really kind of hits me in a good spot, I think.
Let's watch it together, Natasha. We'll play a drinking game. We'll play it on Zoom.
It's going to be a very boring drinking game, though, Kathy. I can't have alcohol, but it's fine. I'll have sugar. It'll be all good. We'll have fun. But no, that sounds like a plan. No, I think he gets points for me for that.
Well, it's certainly interesting. He did actually live 4 years longer than Raquel Welch. So, you know, in the spirit of things, 86, 82, so it goes. Well, we're all going to pass on somewhere.
What he was really good at, Alex, I gather, were commercials. So I read.
And Ridley Scott.
Ridley Scott, of course, but Ridley Scott has branched out very spectacularly, and I'm looking forward to his next historical epic. I gather it's about Napoleon.
There you are. So, to Natasha Wanton, to Kathy Manso, to Sarah Huntley, flying, Sarah. I can see you flying now without the aid of a safety net. Very exciting. And Richard Fitzwilliams, of course, as ever, keep on keeping on. And next week, I suspect, Natasha, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania?
Yes, for better or for worse.
I know Richard's salivating with the very notion of seeing Ant-Man for his third incarnation in terms of his own movie, and I'm sure if he'll probably come out with the same sort of feeling he has with Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Alex, Alex, you haven't disappointed me. I thought, and I was making this little bet, despite a computer glitch, which unfortunately meant I was a little late.
It was
today.
A quantum computer glitch, Richard. It was fate.
It's certainly not fake news. It was reconfiguring, Alex. And when a computer reconfigures, you can't start it. When Everything Everywhere All at Once, how that will do, it's a big question. Perfectly seriously, I admit I'm in a minority. But on the other hand, how will people vote? We simply don't know tonight or what the Oscars say. It's going to be very interesting indeed.
Or for people who are listening to this in March, it's already passed. So just go back in time, unless you've downloaded the podcast. Keep watching the movies.
When you would be here in my arms, waiting for tonight.